Once again, it is time for Arthur Schwartz and for everybody that has been sending me emails and messages. We're going to get back to more and more and more taping as things are going along better and better and better. And Arthur, it's just always great to speak to you. It's probably the highlight of my week.
Oh, thank you for that. I mean, you're the highlight of my week, too. When I'm not, you're not there, I miss you very deeply. But, you know, I wish I could come and visit because I've been baking like crazy. And I try to give away the cake. It reminds me of the days when, may she rest in peace, Suzanne Hamlin had an eating disorder. This has got to be in the mid-80s. And she would stay up all night and bake, not eat any of it, and bring it into the office the next day. Anyway, you know, we're getting old, Marshall.
We
And
are.
We are. And I'm trying to think of ways to stay a little younger. And I was thinking about an old friend the other day. Well, it's already several weeks. And she was like, she was an old lady when I met her. I mean, she was probably in her late 80s when I met her. Very, very vivacious, spry, whatever word you want to apply. And she lived into her mid-90s. And I think, really willed herself to die because tragic things happened that she just said, I have enough. Anyway, but in her 80s, when I said to her, what's the secret to being so, you know, youthful, she said, every morning I wake up and think, what am I going to bake today? And I know exactly now, I know exactly what she meant. It's good to have something to look forward to every day, especially when you're semi-retired and you think you should, you're not doing enough. That's Arthur. Anyway, what got into me? I know what got into me. Several months ago, I baked a banana bread that was beyond delicious. It was, and you can find this recipe on the internet, Dory Greenspan's banana cake. I think it's listed mainly as banana cake. The one that I'm making is you do it in either a bundt pan or I prefer a removable bottom tube pan. Have many of these because that's the pan my grandmother always used on Passover to make her various sponge cakes for Passover. Gotta say, we were usually 24 at the Seder, so she had to make several cakes. And of course, the cake is delicious for days. We would eat it for breakfast, even a walnut cake. I still love the breakfast. Anyway, I had the pan out. I made the cake. I had the pan. It requires 3 to 4 bananas, depending on the size of the bananas, about a cup and a half of mashed banana. And so you got a plan to make Dory's cake. But I had the machine out, my big mixing machine, and I had the pan out. And I thought, you know, there's a pound cake and a couple of other cakes in my books. That I miss, I haven't made in 25 years, 20 years, 30 years. Because when you write cookbooks, you have to keep moving on to the next project and you don't have a chance to make some of the very delicious things that you had, you put in your cookbooks. And I have to say, I've been cooking for my own cookbooks lately and I do have a lot of delicious things. So anyway, I decided I'm going to, as a project, I'm going to retest or at least rebake all the cakes that go into a 10-inch tube pan that are in my books. And what I discovered, besides some good recipes, is that I've learned a lot about mixing cakes over the years. And if you go to my very first cookbook, there's a recipe which is called Cooking in a Small Kitchen. By the way, by the time the book got published, I didn't have such a small kitchen anymore. But believe me, I had my time in small kitchens. Oh, even now, small. Anyway, in that book is a recipe. I think I call it Jewish apple cake. Or maybe it's just apple cake. It's from a friend of mine, long deceased now, Bruce Singer, who got it from his aunt, who of course had it probably written on the back of an envelope, and I made it more than once, and it was always a little on the heavy side, but I liked it, and the flavor was very good, and I put it in that book. Well, nowadays I know so much better about mixing cakes that the updated version of that recipe you can find in my book, Jewish Home Cooking. And it's the parv. Parv means it's neither a dairy thing, meaning no butter, no milk, or other dairy products, and it's not meat, which you wouldn't normally have a meat product in it anyway. But in this case, it's not about having a meat product, it's being able to eat the cake after a meat meal. Because in most Jewish kosher homes, you have to wait 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours after your meat meal before you can eat some kind of dairy products. It's not made with butter, it's made with vegetable oil. And I really did learn a lot. And I'm going to impart some of my wisdom. I used to say this was the reason I didn't like to bake is that it was too precise for me. Well, nowadays, I think I like precise. And you do have to be very precise, meaning things need to be measured properly, things need to be mixed properly. Let's start with flour, because hardly a thing you bake that doesn't have flour in it. Of course, if you're gluten-free, you're using different products than I am, which is wheat flour, white wheat flour. I buy unbleached. Either King Arthur or Hecker's. The brand of flour you use does make a difference because in the Northeast, I considering us Northeast, we use flour for many different things. So it's the protein content of the flour is appropriate for many different things, hence all-purpose flour. However, in the South, where flour is used for cakes and biscuits, more than most other things, the flour has to be a little bit lower in protein, or the word in baking is softer. The flour needs to be a little softer, or more finely milled, to make fluffy biscuits and fluffy cakes. So the kind of flour you use does make a difference. But I buy what my supermarket carries. You like to buy one of the bleached flours like Pillsbury or whatever the hell there is. The difference is really, really so minor. It's not going to make a difference in the cake. So measuring flour is important. For most recipes that are written in the modern day, today, we don't ask you to sift flour, although sometimes yes for measuring purposes, to that in a second. But the proper way to measure flour is to spoon it out of the container it's in, whether that's still the bag you bought it in, or I always decant mine, so to speak, canister. So you spoon it out of the canister into your measuring cup, a dry measure, and you heap the cup. And then with the back of a knife I use, anything straight bladed, straight, you run it across the top of the flour to take off the excess flour. Now, as I have been a cooking teacher for many years, I will tell you that the temptation most people is to tamp the flour down a little bit as they're going across the. They'll put the blade in a flat way so that it really does even it out. No, you don't want to do that. You just want to just scrape off the excess from the top of the measuring cup. That's 1 cup of flour or 1/4 cup of flour, etc. And what you're putting it in is called a dry measure. The next thing is your leavening. In a cake, it's usually baking powder, but sometimes, depending on the liquid you're using, really the acidity, you might add baking soda. Every recipe will have different proportions. However, cake flour, and I'm going to tell you why I'm talking about cake flour comes as a already leavened product. You can, it's Presto cake flour, swan's down cake flour, and that, those cake flours have already added baking powder and a little bit of salt. So I keep some in the house because I don't know, something I've been making lately that has cake flour, but now I want to use it up. And that's why I made a particular cake I'm going to give you the recipe for. So you measure out your baking soda and your baking powder and put it in the bowl, the already measured flour. And then a lot of recipes will tell you to sift them together. I don't bother with that. You don't have to sift them together. Just take a spoon, the same spoon you spoon the flour out of the canister with. Take the spoon and mix it up. I see a lot of people on TV and TikTok using a whisk to do that. That's okay too. But we're not going to do our mixing with a whisk. So I'm not dirtying up the whisk. Anyway, you have those are your dry ingredients. Now, mostly when you make pound cake type cakes that I've been making, it seems almost all these recipes that I have in my books are a pound cake type cake, like pound cake do. The wet ingredients are eggs and either milk, not much necessarily, maybe not any, sour cream, buttermilk. If you're adding sour cream or buttermilk, you then need to counteract the acidity of those products with a little bit of baking soda. That's why soda comes in. Now, the first thing you do when you're mixing a cake, like most cakes, you have to, what they say, cream the butter with the sugar. This is sounds very easy, and it is. I'm using an electric mixer, so it's really easy. But I have learned over the years it is absolutely best to let the butter come to room temperature. So I usually put the sugar in my electric mixing bowl and the butter out of the wax paper that it comes in. Let the butter come to room temperature. Save the butter wrapper. This is a new trick I learned. Use your butter wrapper to grease the pan. Now, I made a pound cake, which I'm going to give you the recipe for, with 3 sticks of butter. So those 3 sticks of butter had enough. I let the butter come to room temperature in the wax, and so enough butter stuck to the paper itself that I was just able to rub that all around my pan and get enough butter out of it. However, if you take the butter out while it's still firm, you're not going to have that result. So you need to take a tablespoon of butter and rub it inside your 10-inch tube pan. Sometimes it's a 9-inch tube pan, but 10-inch tube pan is for most of my recipes. And a tube, when I say a tube pan, it's mine are a light aluminum with aluminum tubes on a flat base inside, and that comes out at the end so that you can actually leave the cake on the base. It's very homey looking then, but usually I can take them off the base too. My grandmother, when she made her sponge cakes, left them on the base. That's why she had so many pans, I guess. Anyway, I inherited. So you're going to cream together means really beat the sugar and the butter together. And over the years, I've decided that what I like to do, what's most efficient, to get the butter started first, and then little by little, not so slow, fast enough, add the sugar, and then literally let your machine run on medium speed 5 minutes. It really does take that long to make the butter fluffy, like most recipes will tell you. Fluffy, well, I don't know. Fluffy is an exaggeration. It looks lighter, that's for sure. Anyway, you let it beat for a good 5 minutes. Oh, once, maybe twice, if necessary, stop the machine, lift the beater, and scrape down the bowl. At the end of 5 minutes, you've well creamed the butter and sugar together. Now is when you add the eggs. And you add one at a time. not all at once, one at a time, and you beat a good minute between additions. So some recipes may have as few as two eggs, some may have as many as four eggs. So that's going to take a good 4 or 5 minutes to get those eggs beaten in. Once the eggs are beaten in, you can add your flavoring, vanilla, whatever. I used almond the other day, and I got a little bit of protest that the almond was taking over. But even though I used a scant quarter teaspoon, I think I'm laying off the almond extract. I like vanilla well enough. And that most cakes are flavored like this, are flavored with vanilla, which, by the way, I think brings out the taste of them. By the way, I put at even if an old recipe you have doesn't have salt in it, add a quarter of a teaspoon of salt. It really does make a difference. You won't nothing will taste salty. It's just going to taste fatty. I think I like that. So this is the basic mixing technique, and it's slow. You've got to be precise. Use a dry measure for your dry ingredients. Use a measuring cup for liquid ingredients, milk, yogurt, whatever it is. And the thing that I like, I'm going to give you a recipe for, is a really, really old-fashioned pound cake. And it's the recipe, I said I was cooking through my books. So this is a recipe that's in Soup Suppers. Gotta say, my best-selling cookbook, written while I was living in West Cornwall, and it's 30 years old already. That makes me feel old. Well, at the time, I said that this is the best pound cake I've ever baked. You know what? It still may be the best pound cake I've ever baked. I made it, and just this morning. A friend who I gave a large portion of it to, called to say she was still eating it, that she'd just eaten the last piece. It does hold up for a week. And actually, I love this pound cake toasted. So towards the end of its life, I might put some slices in the toaster. By the way, in this case, a toaster oven, I find, is way better than a pop-up toaster because a pop-up toaster, your cake could break up. Anyway,
My
so here's
grandmother
this
used to cook
recipe.
hers. My grandmother used to cook hers for us in a big iron pan with butter.
Oh, you mentioned two buzzwords for me: iron pan and butter. Well, this pound cake, I have to say, in the book, it's called Norwegian pound cake. I think the only reason I called it Norwegian is that it was a recipe given to me by Mike Erickson, a bantam, Connecticut, and he is Swedish, so I guess that's it, you know. Anyway, this mixing is totally bizarre, and so one of the reasons I re made this recipe, which I hadn't made in 25 years at least, was because I sort of didn't believe it in my own recipe, but it worked out perfectly. So in this case, you put all the ingredients in your machine. They all must be at room temperature. And you let them mix, beat on medium speed for 20 minutes. Now, this seems like a crazy amount of time, but you will see before your eyes, the batter will really change. It really will get a lot of air mixed into it, and blah, blah. So the ingredients are 2 1/4 cups of sugar. Remember, it's a very big. 6 eggs, large eggs. By the way, whenever a recipe says eggs, no other descriptor, it means large eggs. In American recipe convention, egg is a large egg. 3 sticks of butter. This is the recipe where I just used the wax paper to butter the pan. And you do want to butter and flour your 10-inch tube pan, or you can bake this in a bundt pan, but be sure to really grease it very, very well, because bundt pans, with all their decorative articulation, are more difficult to unmold than a tube pan, of course, one with a false bottom. Did I say 3/4 of a cup of milk? Now, 3 cups of cake flour. And one of the reasons I really wanted to make this is, as I said before, I wanted to use up self-rising cake flour that I bought for some other purpose altogether. But it's 3 cups of cake flour, and the leavening in this case is a tablespoon, literally a tablespoon of baking powder, and 2/3 teaspoon of salt. Now, I made it with just 3 cups of cake flour, and it came out perfect. So, in fact, I read that cake, self-rising cake flour has 1 teaspoon of baking powder per cup of cake flour, and that seemed to be true. So, as I said, all the ingredients at room temperature. The flour, however, does in this case need to be measured after it is sifted. So what I do with that is I take my measuring cup, I sift the flour into the measuring cup. It's going to be messy, so I put the measuring cup on a piece of wax paper or parchment paper to collect the excess flour. So each cup of flour, of cake flour, has been sifted into the cup. First, of course, you measure it just the way I told you before. You take a spoon and spoon it into the cup, and then you. The 3 cups of already sifted cake flour, and if you're doing just cake flour without the pre-leavening, it's a tablespoon of butter and salt. And then 1 teaspoon, but I use a generous teaspoon of vanilla because I'm leaving out the almond extract. The original recipe in my book, Soup Suppers, calls for a quarter teaspoon of almond extract. And as I know, I don't love almond extract myself, I used a scant quarter teaspoon, and it still seemed to be very powerful. So I'm not doing that anymore. I'm going to use, I'd say, 1.5 teaspoons of vanilla. And then you put them all in the bowl, and I would say pulse. Usually, I have a machine that has the paddle type beater. Pulse it in the beginning so that the flour doesn't fly all over the place. But once it starts mixing, put it on medium speed and time it. Really, you've got to go the full 20 minutes of beating. And the batter will, in fact, once in a while, you can stop the machine and scrape it down. Now, my machine did not overheat 20 minutes. It got warm, but it didn't overheat. And if you have a more delicate machine, you might be careful in that respect. Don't let your machine overheat. An old one might be, well, mine's pretty old. Anyway, this gets baked in a 350 degree oven in a greased and floured, as I said, 10-inch tube pan. And I did bake this both in a bundt pan and in the tube pan. I liked it better in the tube pan. In my bundt pan, which is a dark metal, things seem to get, darker, I'll say. I'll just, well, I, it's not a negative. It could be a positive. But anyway, so my timing and everything is based on a light metal, not a dark bundt pan. So you pour the batter into the pan and bake it for 1 hour and 20 minutes. I am not exaggerating. Almost every pound cake recipe you find has you 60, 75 minutes. This one you need longer. The fact is, I did it for every one. I did the whole hour and 20 minutes. I did have one spot in the cake in the end, one small, tiny area that was, I thought, a little underbaked. So even depend if you know your oven, everybody knows their oven. And if you have a slow oven, give it an extra 5 minutes. If you have a fast oven, 1 hour and 20 minutes will be just fine. This is a cake that improves with age, as do I find almost every pound cake I've ever baked, meaning you can't resist it when it's warm still. But wait, it gets better. So the cake comes out of the oven. I put it on a rack in the pan. I let it cool down. I get 15, 20 minutes, and then you can take it out of the pan and let it cool fully on a rack. And to store it, I like to store it under aluminum foil or a cake film, not plastic, which I find doesn't do any wonders for the temperature. You actually want a little air to be able to get to this cake. And that's it. This is a, I don't know, I gave away two enormous hunks. We ate it a few times. It's a big cake. It's also the kind of cake that you want to put other things on. This is a very good pound cake, especially toasted, for ice cream or for some kind of a sundae.
Does
Now,
Bob ever
Marshall.
fight you? Does Bob ever fight you for giving it away?
Once he did. It's funny you mentioned. He said, don't keep giving away our cake. I said, you know, but it's to Ellen next door and she needs the calories. We don't need the calories. Well, the one we have still working here, although I'm finished with it now, is this sour cream cake with chocolate chips. My sister gave me this recipe many moons ago. I don't remember which book this is in. I made it again, but he likes that one a lot. So I did not. He likes the chocolate chip. So the cake is very good, but I wouldn't do it with chocolate chips again. Actually, the original recipe had a crumb topping too, and I'm thinking this cake would be better with a crumb topping. And there's another recipe I made from one of my books that has it's a cream cheese pound cake. I really like the pound cake, and I like this cake a lot. It has a not but and it has both a center streak chocolate, which is just a mixture of cocoa, sugar, and that's it. I think cocoa, sugar, and what else? That's it. And then you put some of this on the top of the cake too. And as you're smushing it into the very top of the cake, it bakes up with a nice little chocolatey crust. I'm willing to send cake to you, Marshall. Do we have a courier who can carry something from Brooklyn to where you're in
No,
Lakeville?
but I'll tell you what, in a couple of weeks when I can accept it, I'll make sure we can do it.
Are you under any eating restrictions?
Yes. Yeah, for about another month, month and a half.
What kind of a diet is it?
Low fiber.
Low
Very,
fi
very low spice, very,
mm-hmm.
very bland.
Low fiber. So what's your favorite food on this diet? Is there such a thing?
This is going to sound crazy to you. Some cheese, I don't care what type of it is. Cheese melted on a plate with some fresh cut tomatoes.
No, that sounds delicious to me. The cheese, maybe somebody can get you raclette. You know about raclette?
Yes.
It's supposed to be eaten that way, but you can't have the potato with it because that's too much fiber for you.
The only way I could have potato if it was a baked potato that was all mushed down, that's all.
Well, that's not a bad thing at all.
No, I've had that over the course of the past week, so we're heading in the right direction, Arthur.
You know, when my friend Suzanne was in the rehab center that she was in, she became vegan because she discovered the best thing to eat there was the baked potato.
All right, well, I
All
promise
right, I
people.
look forward to talking to you again very soon.
I promise everybody we will be back with a new episode next week.
Right.
Okay, Arthur, take care.
You too.